Thank you, everyone, for joining me today on In Focus. I'm Danny Walsh, a Bloomfield Township Supervisor. I'm joined today by two gentlemen that you know by face and by name. It's Chief John Leroy from the Fire Department and Chief Jimmy Gallagher from the police station. These gentlemen are going to be with us today talking about something that is really important for our community. It is really important for not just our fire department and police department and the schools, but also us as a community. We're going to be talking today about MCI training. It's a mass casualty incident training. We'll be doing this on August 30th from 7 a.m. to noon, and it's going to be here on campus, and it's a really large production that's being put together. It's going to affect multiple people in our community, multiple resources. So today we're going to talk to the experts to see why we do it, what it's for, and how the community will benefit. So thank you, gentlemen, for coming today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. So normally when I get you two in a room, I do have to remind Jimmy to let John talk a little bit. So remember, we got to do both today.
I know. Yeah. It's going to be tough.
Right. I do love the banter, though, between you two. And that's something special here in the township that you don't see everywhere. First responders, we all love both. Police and fire here, though, you all love each other as well. There's a fun rivalry that you see, and it's more of that sibling rivalry. So it's something special that we have here. And it's partially because of you two kind of growing up here in Bloomfield Township together in the system, I should call it.
He likes to remind me that I'm a little older. I mean, just a little. Not much, but a little. So, but we did grow up in the agencies respectively together.
Yeah. We started within 9 months of each other at the same time and just progressed through the departments at roughly the same pace. Yeah. So, wow.
Well, thank you for everything you two have helped build here and continue as leaders to build. So thank
appreciate
you.
It. Thank you.
One of the things that you're working together on is the MCI training. Let's talk about whoever wants to take the floor first of how this training is different than you already do a lot of preparation for mass shootings or assailants and all of that. But how is this different and what's important to have this here?
I think the biggest difference is it's not really a training. At this point, both departments are already trained in this type of event. We know how to treat patients. We know how to stop an active shooter. This is a scenario. This is to test our training to make sure that we are ready and if there's anything that needs to be changed to our training in the future.
Yeah, and it's twofold for that. It is testing the police and fire's training that we've done for years in reference to mass casualty incidents. It's really training for the school district as well. And that's one of the important thing here is the partnership that we have with the school and the need for the teachers in the building to understand what it looks like when law enforcement comes in. You know, unfortunately, we've had, you know, this is in our backyard now with the Oxford shooting and with Michigan State. And there was a lot of film or a lot of video that came out of plainclothes officers, you know, coming to doors and students not knowing that were they truly the police. And so for them to understand and for the school district and even our own campus here, because we're so close to the high school where this is going to occur, understanding what it looks like when there is a mass response from police and fire. There is no longer from a fire standpoint where it was, okay, police go in and we secure the building and then we call fire in. No, when the opportunity presents itself, police are escorting fire in to warm and hot zones to extract patients out. And it's just so important for people to see outside of our field what really occurs during these incidents.
And you mentioned it's police and fire together. Although we did have kind of a test run because we do have the blue light system here, and you can maybe go into what that is, but how will this be similar to that but different in that we have the people from the school involved, but how many different agencies are coming? When somebody pulls that blue light, first of all, again, if you could explain what it is, who comes?
Yeah, so the blue point alarm system was unique to us initially. When they built the high school, the school district at the time with Superintendent Glass and then obviously Superintendent Watson came in, put a focus on safety and security of students. So the Blue Point alarm is strictly an active assailant type alarm that can be pulled in the school. It's similar to a fire alarm, but it's only pulled in police emergencies where life or property is at risk. So if there was a fight in the hallway, it's not pulled. You know, that's a 911 phone call. But if there was an active incident which should cause casualty in the building, the students and the staff are pulled, taught how to, and when is appropriate to pull this. We had the incident in December of 2019 where that did get pulled. It was more accidental in the end, but with that, I think we had 26 police agencies respond, because at that time we had no idea whether it was a true alarm or false alarm. And it took us probably a good half an hour before we realized there was no casualty in the building. There was no armed student in the building or assailant. But it took that response to get it. And just to back up a little bit too, Oakland County in 2009 under Sheriff Bouchard at the time created OAKTAC, which is an Oakland County consortium. And just about 97% of Oakland County is covered by it. All 1.3 million residents are covered by a mutual aid between all the agencies, where we teach, we train, and we react and respond the same exact way. We tested it here on the Blue Point alarm system. We unfortunately had a real live response at Oxford, and we know it works the way our county together collaboratively responds.
Right. And don't you have something similar in the fire department as well with the counties, not the full county, but some shared services?
Yes, we have our mutual aid organization is the Oakway Mutual Aid Group, which is now 11 full-time fire departments in the area that we work, train, collaborate everything together. It's the same type of response. And then moving outside of that, of the Oakway system, which is those 11 departments, is the Michigan Mutual Aid Box Alarm Association, or MABUS, which allows us to pull in resources from across the state at any given time. When Lansing happened, they activated the MABUS system, and the Oakway group sent 5 ambulances to Lansing, no questions asked, and they were on the road almost immediately. So we have those types of training and groups that work together as well.
These partnerships that you have all built make us safer, not just for if, God forbid, somebody came into a school, but even for if a tornado hits, if anything hits. This preparation that you've already put in, where you've created these partnerships, you train together. You, for example, will be having people involved in this training. This makes us safer as a whole, and it's something special to this area as well, because you do see sometimes when there's a tragedy elsewhere, part of it is, who do they even reach out to? So you've already kind of laid that groundwork to protect us. So let's talk a little bit about the training. We had Lieutenant Mike Buchek and Officer Ryan Smith that kind of coordinated it with your departments, with the schools. And I was so happy to see that it was about 600 teachers are going to be involved in this. And that's amazing, because they understand it. I personally don't feel that teachers are put in the right position, and they're there to teach, but now they've also become lifesavers and first responders to some degree. So it's important for people to know that they're joining in on this too. But from your sides, from the police and the fire, what is this training? Who's going to be coming in? Kind of do maybe an overview of, not telling us everything step by step, but what does it mean, and what are you preparing for that day?
This will be a multi-jurisdictional response. It's been proven that many of these incidents, when they're real, overwhelm a community immediately. There's still emergencies going on outside of the incident. So there's always the concern for still protecting the community when these incidents happen. So we are partnering with, on the police side of it, multi-agencies. I think we sent the invite to 9 or 10 agencies who will send, you know, a handful of officers each to respond to this. Again, we're really unique and kind of a model across the country when it comes to our collaboration in Oakland County. We meet and we talk about it all the time. John and I talk just about multiple times a week, but on the respective fields, I meet with the chiefs around Oakland County, whether it's the Woodward corridor only or general as a whole as Oakland County, you know, at least once a month, to prepare for these types of things, talk about them, see what we learn. You had the privilege this year of attending the Active Assailant Conference, and we take what we learn, the mistakes that are out there, because obviously there are mistakes, and we try to learn from everybody else when they go through a real incident. And they're so in depth. There's so many different areas of expertise needed in one of these incidents. So bringing our partners in from other jurisdictions, they're the ones who are going to respond with us because we'll be overwhelmed quickly. And it's not because we're not prepared. But on the other side of that, I think it's an understanding that because some of the, and I'll say failures out, around in some of these incidents, we want our community to know that we're prepared, that we aren't going to wait outside for 17 minutes before we go into a building if there's an active assailant. Our job is to go in, neutralize that assailant, and get the fire department in there to render aid to these victims inside these buildings.
Right. Did you want to add anything?
Yeah, just on our side, like on this day, we've reached out, and the Oakway Group, Mutual Aid Group, we're going to have ambulances from the entire group here that day, along with our personnel. Almost a third of our department will be in that day as well, in addition to what is normally staffed. So that way we can handle those, anything, because we still have to run operations in the township. And so that way, if any other emergency incidents come in, we're prepared for that, and we can still do this training, and it doesn't, you know, fall apart or if an incident occurs.
And it's important to note that although operations will be continuing, whether it's by phone or by email, the township campus will be shut down for safety, safety of the people participating, as well as safety of the community that may not fully be aware of it. So on August 30th from 7 to 12, it will be shut down. Part of that is not only for safety of traffic, but you're doing something a little different this time by adding moulage. I had to look up what that meant. So I'll have you kind of explain what that is. But this is trying to make it as realistic as possible so that it's hard for those first responders who they sometimes have to step past something. And that's hard to really get used to because in you, it's stop and save. And this moulage that you'll explain, it'll go into making it more realistic. It's not something pinned on that says gunshot. It is what looks like a gunshot. So do you want to go into what that moulage is?
Moulage is strictly almost like we're bringing in nursing students and they are going to be dressing the part. They are going to have the injuries that correspond to what, like you said, the sheet of paper says, but they're going to have blood, simulated blood. They're going to have the injuries to show to draw your attention to them. So that's the biggest, it's the realism that you can't train for that will be a part of this. It's just, it's almost like a Hollywood type of setup with art students and people dressing the part.
And that's something that will help you as responders, but certainly if somebody's coming in for a passport picture with a child, we wouldn't want them to see that. And I do want to do the due diligence of it will be around tax season. So people will still be able to pay taxes online during that morning. But again, if someone wants it in person, please come the day prior or later that afternoon after 12:30 when we reopen for in-person. But this is both to protect those participating as well as, you know, what the onseer might see. So when we talk about the training that goes into this, how did Lieutenant Buchek and Ryan Smith, how do you even start? You know, you have to create a scenario, you have to figure out who's involved, and it's for almost 1,000 people. So how did they even do this?
Yeah. When the school came to us and said that they were interested in some type of training and testing the abilities of the school, you know, again, we talk about all the needs, right? We talk about reunification and transportation and where do students go and things like that. So it was that exact question. They looked at me and said, oh, you know, like, oh, but they are both reality-based training instructors, active shooter instructors for us and for OakTac. So they have a lot of training. They've gone to schools to develop and learn how to write these scenarios. We do it on an annual basis. So every year, at least one time a year, we're running through real scenarios. The difference with adding this moulage, like you mentioned a minute ago, is adding the stress level to the officers, because it's different than when you're just, like you said, you pin a note on them or there's a, or our mannequins that we may have. But they really just went back to their training and included other areas, like Lieutenant Jeremy Stubbs from Auburn Hills has done an incident similar at the Great Lakes Crossing Mall. So bringing him in, our FBI partners and who've done it in the past, they came in. So they really opened up and kind of created the committee, which you've been fortunate enough to sit back and kind of come to these meetings and give your input, but at the same time, see the expertise of these guys and the stress level it puts on them to make sure that this thing, you mentioned the township hall being closed for that morning for in-person visits. That is strictly for safety. And that is because every single person that steps inside of a certain boundary around the township has to be searched. Our firearms have to be made safe. We cannot have, in a training scenario, anybody get injured because we were not doing our due diligence in the safety aspect of it. And you know, John and I both come from our spouses are in the educational field, so we think of these things when we're going through, and it's important for those teachers to be able to be in positions. And that allowed Ryan and Mike to have the ability to. It makes it easier to write the scenario when you want to have participants who want to be in positions that they would normally be in on a daily basis, because now they don't have to write those in. Now it's just natural, and they just focus on the scenario with the fire department experts.
Right. And you mentioned that you're doing these trainings sometimes all the time. I mean, I've walked in sometimes when in the firehouse they have things laid out and everything. How is this something that is you mentioned you get to go to Great Lakes. You're also going to be adding other people here to come. How is that helpful for them watching? Like when you went to Great Lakes, even if they're not participating and they have to kind of sit back and watch, how is that helpful for a chief from fire or police from other areas to come and view?
Every opportunity that you get to do a scenario like this or a real life event, you learn from it. And you learn what to do, what worked well, what didn't work well. And we're creatures of habit. You remember those things for the next time. One of the biggest events that we've had here is that Blue Point. You know, it was a lot of people in the community were upset and how it happened and things like that. But we look at it as one of those learning experiences. We learned so much that day on both the police and fire side. And now we're able to apply it moving forward. We were able to dissect that false alarm. It was almost like a training for us because it developed into, it had the stimulus. It had things that we can't even simulate in the training that day. And we learned from it. And then with all the other events too that have happened from Oxford, we've dissected it. We've learned from it. The active assailant conference that most of the police chiefs and fire chiefs go to. And you learn what worked out there, what didn't work, and how to change. So every time we do a scenario like this, the chiefs get involved, everybody gets involved, because you want to learn and make sure it doesn't happen or any problems that you have happen on the training, and then you learn from it and move forward.
And if I may, there's so many different expertise. The fire service is so much more advanced when it comes to incident command than the police service. We set it up, but it takes a little bit longer for us to do it. The fire service does it on every run. And so that's an advantage to them. And when something like this happens, it may be a police response initially, but to have the fire chief or the battalion chiefs who do that incident command every day standing behind you saying, hey, chief, you know, police chief, you guys should be considering this. We've got to consider this. And it's rapid fire at us. Right. And to have those abilities to do it, and we have what now is more set up now called Unified Incident Command, where we partner as agencies, our experts in our field. John and I are going to be so busy but our doers, our captains and battalion chiefs, will really be the incident commanders on those scenes, standing together at a place, telling each other and communicating constantly, which is something that's more evolving now, because before it was a police situation and a fire situation, and there wasn't a ton of communication. And that's really during all these incidents where we see the fail. Yes. When I say the failures are shortcomings, because we're both trying to do similar
things. Information, yeah.
And it really jams thing right up.
That's where we run into issues, is on the communication side. Yep. And that's where we're learning from it. You know, before, really 9/11 was what brought that about, and changes in the radio systems and things. But now we have the ability to, first of all, we can talk on the same frequencies if we have to, or we can at least listen. So if they're talking, at least our incident commander is listening to what's going on, and they can have those informal conversations or be ready for the next step, as opposed to waiting and being told what to do or trying to figure it out.
And I think it's important just to touch on that, is that this, not only for mass casualty incidents, you're talking day-to-day operations for our residents. There's been times where the police have been on an incident and you'll look down the street and you'll see a fire truck and a rescue standing by and you're like, well, we didn't ask for them. And they'll say, well, we heard it on the radio and there was potential for injury. We were going to be close by, whether it was for one of our residents to extract somebody or for an officer that could get injured. So it's not only on major incidents. Yeah. I wanted, because for our community, that's important.
And you're even preparing, when you talk about safety of the community and what if something happens, you're even preparing to the point of, you mentioned there'll be incident command, there'll be, all of you will be really in the thick of it. So what happens if there's a real emergency in the township or if there's an actual injury? Maybe, well, you have 600 people running. Again, this is supposed to replicate the chaos of what actually happens. When that blue light was pulled, or blue point was pulled, people scattered. They, even if you had picked a spot for to go, people naturally scatter. So with all of that going on, if somebody does fall and trip or gets hurt, how are we covered through our partners or such that if a real incident happens outside of township campus or on campus, how will that be handled?
If an incident happens on the township, if somebody were to fall and get injured, we would probably roll them right into the scenario because everybody here is trained. All the equipment's already here. They would just be treated as a patient. Outside of the township from the fire department side or outside of the scenario area, we're running a fully staffed shift that day as if nothing were different. So any emergency that comes in, there'll be a full allotment of personnel that are assigned to the township and not assigned to the training that day.
Right. And same in the police department. We have our normal operations that day. Most of the manpower that's coming in is either off duty or obviously we're relying on other agencies for that response as well. So there will be no change in the operations. And much like the Blue Point, for Oxford, we internally had training going on. So we were able to send a contingent of officers that were working that day, and the officers that were in the training on their own, it was not asked. They just ran to the station, got in full uniform, and covered our road patrol. So it'd be no different in this situation. If, you know, in the event something did tragically happen here, we're going to have even more manpower on scene that we would break the scenario and respond to that and you know, that situation. So,
and out of respect, I have been holding off on mentioning Oxford. Because we did have so many people involved, both from the police and fire, and they know that we appreciate everything that they did. But again, out of respect, because I am already tearing up here, I just want you, both of your teams, to know, everybody that was there that day, you weren't even asked to go, you just knew to go. So thank you for everything you did. And also at Michigan State. Yeah. It was, again, that not just at night, but then also Maggie and Nick going out there with therapy dogs and the way you helped. Again, you don't even need to be asked. It's just natural for both of your departments to just jump in and help. And that's pretty special.
It is special, but you give us the credit for it, but we also have to give our elected official credit. Yourself, Brian Martin, and then the board too. We have the freedom or the ability to make those decisions as leaders of our respective agencies to feel confident. We know we can just make a phone call, Danny, this is what, you know, Lansing needs or East Lansing needs. And those partnerships stretch a long way. And, you know, John does things across the state for the fire service. We have guys internally who train and whether it's, Chief Langmeyer, who retired, was part of Michigan State Staff and Command. Those, while they seem small at the time, when something tragic happens or when something does happen, we have those partnerships that matter. And like John said, the Oakway chiefs responding that night, sending 5 rescues without even blinking an eye, because we know as agencies that our partners who didn't go would backfill us in the event that it was needed.
Right.
And that's so hard to tell people until something happens and you see a Troy police car, Auburn Hills police car, Birmingham and Bloomfield Township helping, or vice versa.
Right.
Internally, we know we can count on our partners and our elected officials.
And the reach that you mentioned is pretty amazing, because I remember that Blue Point. And of course, the natural thing is they want to come. So, of course, you come drive by, you see the melee, and you know you're going to be a worse addition to it, so I didn't go in, but I saw the people running and then the amount of, like you said, different names on different police cars and everything. It was amazing how fast and how many came to show up. So it's good to know that although it was tragic that it was pulled because the children, again, we didn't know that it was a false alarm.
Right.
So that was traumatizing. But they also learned so much, and you have both said that some may see mistakes, you see opportunities, and it's a learning opportunity and to improve. And I know you've gone, Chief Leroy, to some others to watch. I believe it was Waterford or somewhere where they do different. Like, we're focused on an active assailant right now. There have been some that have been, we've been talking about maybe doing something in our EOC, preparing for a tornado or something like that. Your reach even goes outside of the state. We have Michigan Task Force One. Did the police, and if you want to touch on that a little bit, I'm kind of getting off topic, but a little bit of that, is there something also similar from the police?
From the police side of it, we have to be requested under certain laws and regulations of those states to require us or ask for permission, and then they have to sign some declarations within the state to allow us to come out. Normally, that will come through through Sheriff Bouchard's office.
Okay. And I know we had some representatives down in Vermont.
Yes.
And they even took a little detour. They got stuck in Massachusetts for a while because of all of the flooding going on in Vermont. So we actually have local groups that are part of that that go.
Yes, we have several of our firefighters are involved in Michigan Task Force One, which is its own MABUS division, as I talked about earlier. And they really go, they're an urban search and rescue team that have been deployed all over the country in hurricanes, earthquakes. They just recently returned from a week-long deployment into Vermont for the flash flooding that they had, because they're also a swift water rescue team. So those are just even more resources that are available to anybody in the state of Michigan.
And then when we talk about, it'll be on August 30th from 7 to 12, when we talk about how you'll be learning and we will as elected officials, what we need the public to understand is to stand down that day. Please do not try and come to Township Campus, the Senior Center, and the Township Hall and DPW, it will all be closed to in-person traffic. That will be blocked off. The streets will be blocked off. So please make it easier on those that are part of this training. And again, you can use phone or email to still get services, or please think ahead the day prior or later that day. Because again, this is about safety. We have about 600 teachers, I believe about 100 police officers, and I'm not sure the exact number, about the same with fire. So you have about 800 actually involved, and then you have those of us on the outside surface. So you're talking, you know, hundreds of people. Please make it safe for everyone else, and please just stay away from campus that morning. Our cable and communications department is going to be getting that information out. We'll work with HOA so that they can also get that out. But the best thing you can do that day is protect your first responders and your teachers by giving them the grace to have that township campus. Another thing that we wanted to let people know, that if you are a resident or a business, we can perform a security audit for you and help you be more prepared for an active assailant situation. Does anybody want to touch on that, what that means?
Yeah, our community relations officers, it started with now retired Sergeant Matejczak and Officer Marthin, but now Officer Soli, they have specialized training in that field where they can come do business or home surveys. They weren't going to tell people to spend millions of dollars on cameras, but it's simple things of cutting shrubbery of a residence, or, you know, in a building, or for businesses, you know, where could your weaknesses be? So they try to do it in a cost effective way, but it's a free service we provide as the township, and all they have to do is reach out to Officer Nick Soli here at the township.
That is wonderful. I did not know about that either. So yes. Thank you for teaching me a little bit. Is there anything else, as we're wrapping up now, is there anything else that you would like to highlight from your departments, or make sure the residents know, or anything else that you want to add to this?
No, I just want to reinforce that the residents can rest assured that we train on this and we're ready for an incident. Nobody's ever truly ready, but we're as ready as we ever can be for an incident, if God forbid this were to ever happen.
Yeah, and it's the importance is the training. It's the exposure, because we will always fall back on our training. And as the school districts are exposed to these in a controlled environment, if a real thing happens, they're going to know what to do and how to respond because they've been exposed. And that's the most important portion of it, is getting people to recognize they know and they can do in these situations, and they're heroes when it happens.
I want to thank you both, in particular, both chiefs, Lieutenant Buchek, Officer Smith, and the schools, because I think together you're going to become the gold standard of how you train going forward. You know, a lot of people, we think that we're ready, and it's not until it happens that we don't know what we don't know. I'm hoping that when people learn about this, and those that are going to be able to see it, that it's shared and it becomes something that across the country, we all prepare. I'm thankful that we have forward-thinking chiefs, that we have forward-thinking school superintendents and directors that put this together, because this is sort of unheard of. You don't often hear of this large of a multi-agency coming together to prepare. So again, I hope this becomes the gold standard. I look forward to seeing how everything excels that day. I have all the faith in the world in both of your departments and the schools. And again, thank you so much for everything you do on a daily basis.
Thank you very much for having us.
So thank you, everybody. Again, this is Dani Walsh with Bloomfield In Focus. And again, one last time to remind, it is August 30th from 7 a.m. to noon. So we will not be opening up Township Campus for in-person that day until 12:30. Thank you so much and have a great day.